Welcome everyone back to this special edition of Easing the Reader, which is actually probably be called Easing the Viewer, maybe, or reviewing. But Easing the Viewer, whatever. My name is Chris Mary Hopman. With me, I have David Green, a man of many talents, one of them being watching TV shows on Amazon Prime.
Watching them a lot. And also staying awake because I'm exceedingly tired today. I don't know why. Yeah. And it's I'm quite impressed that I'm still awake.
Is it because you've been burning the midnight oil or no?
Not really. I've still been sleeping very well lately. I mean, that's what happens when you're writing three separate book series and also planning the fourth one at the same time.
Yeah.
Because when I go to I was on a podcast the other day and they were asking me about like my like working schedule and I kind of like was saying how I do it. And they were like, well, what do you do to like relax? And I go, well, I try to relax, but then I just, my brain starts then thinking about all the next things that I need to write. So
I used to write to relax. So now that's what I do. So relax.
So I can kind of just lay in bed and start thinking like, so what I need to do tomorrow and what do I need to do with this in the future and what do I need to do with this? And then.
Well, I mean, at least you've got that. I mean, I have to try to plan in all the writing while also having other commitments at my like day job. So I wish, I mean, I don't know. Depends.
Quit your day job.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would, and probably, hopefully my bosses aren't listening to this, I would quit the teaching part and just do the international part because I can write when I'm on the road, in hotel rooms and stuff like that. But unfortunately, it's not to that level where it pays any bills.
Yes, and you could, if you're just traveling around internationally, you could be like a writing James Bond. You could actually be Ian Fleming.
I could be the man with the golden pen.
Yeah, that's right. You could open your own little mansion in Jamaica called Golden Eye.
That does sound like the dream. I don't know Jamaica. I've always wanted to go to Costa Rica, but I don't know.
You'd have to call it Golden Eye too, seeing as that one is still there, and open it next door to the original Golden Eye.
I would call it License to Kill.
License to Thrill.
License to Thrill. That would be a different kind of Jamaican retreat. Anyway, we're going to talk about the TV show. We Love Time TV show. I did happen to see a little bit of news, and that was that the season two was delayed, or it wasn't going to, but that was known. I don't know if it's the news agents just like.
Yeah, this was clickbait from Screen Rant. If you see anything from Screen Rant, you can kind of just take it with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, I never click on it. I just read the.
Yeah, I'm going out on a limb with that. And just to say anything from Screen Rant is pure clickbait and you can discount it. Some people might disagree with me, but. What I've seen, I think they probably work for Screen Rant. That's the only people that I don't even think they would disagree. So what that was they made this article. They also made another article as well saying that Barney Harris didn't come back because he refused to get a COVID vaccine, which, you know, there might be an element of truth to that in a way, but at the time when they came back to start filming, after the delay, vaccines weren't available. So he couldn't have had one anyway. Now maybe they were like, you know, further on down the line, you have to have them. But apparently there was other things as well, but we don't know about them. So it's like they just basically just make up crap. But this thing about it being delayed is still like, the Lord of the Rings TV series is coming out on September 2nd. So Wheel of Time is going to get delayed. And it's like, well, Wheel of Time didn't come out until the end of November, and the Lord of the Rings show is 8 episodes, and the first 2 episodes are dropping on the first day. So it'll be done by the end of October, so it'll have no impact on it whatsoever. So they're basically saying, like, because Lord of the Rings is going to be delayed, but it's like it'll have no impact.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we don't, and the thing is, as well, it doesn't have a release date, so it can't be delayed because it's not had a release date yet. Everyone's just kind of thinking, well, maybe November, because they're filming for the last episode or maybe the last two episodes now for season two, which is earlier than last year. And they still got it out for November, so you know, we'll see. I'd be surprised if it wasn't November or December, because it's done so well for them in that time slot. And yeah, they won't have The Witcher coming in the final few weeks, like they did this year, because I don't think Witcher's going to be out until 2023 by the sounds of it. But it did so well for them in that time slot. And I was reading last night, Bloomberg sent out a report saying that it was officially the biggest new series in America last year.
The Wheel of Time.
Yeah, even beating The Book of Boba Fett.
Really? I was reading... Oh, well, maybe it was before. Or maybe it was in the beginning of this year. I thought there was a different show that nabbed that part, but maybe that was for Netflix. I don't know. Netflix is always like breaking their own.
Well, Netflix, I think it wasn't the biggest show of the year. Like, there was things that were bigger. No. Like, there was more viewers for Witcher 2, for example. But that's, you know, that's season two. And obviously, as well, Netflix has a bigger, even though Amazon's like one of the biggest companies in the world, Netflix has a bigger audience at the moment, and so does Disney. Yeah. It's been, you know, there's more things on it. It's been out for longer, and you know, when you look at these kind of top 10 kind of things of most watched in the year, generally it's always 8 of them are from Netflix and 2 of them are from Disney or something like that. And the ones from Disney are usually The Mandalorian, yeah, and something else. But this year, obviously, Wheel of Time broke into that. I think it was like 4th or something, and not too far behind The Witcher, which is like a real good result for them, because there was nothing else from Amazon on there. But in terms of like actual new series altogether, it was ranked number one. And I was surprised it beat Book of Boba Fett, actually, because obviously it has that tie-in with The Mandalorian. I don't know if you've been watching it, but like the last two
episodes... I haven't started watching it yet, actually. I've been watching... I started watching Peacemaker instead.
Oh, right, yeah. Book of Boba Fett isn't great. The first 4 episodes are just... They're kind of just very... There's not enough story that they're trying to tell for the first 4 episodes for what this thing is. And it's 7 episodes, right? And then it doubles down on that, because episodes 5 and 6 are literally all about the Mandalorian. He appears back in it. And it's like Mandalorian season 2.5. It's like setting things up for the third season, but it's things that are absolutely crucial to that series. And in the last 2 episodes, Boba Fett has been in it for 30 seconds, and I think he has 1 line in it, right? And then it's like next week is the last episode, so there wasn't enough story to kind of do like what they wanted to do for like a, and you can really tell, because like one of the episodes, like, because he gets on doing this like flashback thing every time he goes into this back to tank, and he gets on doing this really like annoying shot of like the back tank and then zooming in on Boba Fett while he's kind of like laying inside the Boba Fett and the back tank, and he kept on doing it every single fucking time, right? Like, do it once and we know it's an establishing shot, we get it, but and every single time. And in a couple of episodes there's like multiple flashbacks from when he was like left in the Sarlacc pit and then to the point where you see him again in the Mandalorian. But then one of the episodes, which is on for like 50 minutes, 40 minutes of it is a flashback.
Oh, yeah.
It does the back to tank thing, and you're like, okay, here's another. And he's just hanging around with sand people as well.
Oh, okay.
And it's so like it's hard, and you're like, oh man. And so it does the zoom in, and you're like, okay, here comes the flashback. And then the flashback just keeps going, it just doesn't stop. And then like with like 5 minutes of the episode left, it goes back into current time again. It's like, well, this current time storyline just doesn't have a lot of meat to it, which it clearly doesn't, because when the flashbacks, so in episode 4, the flashbacks catch up to like where we met him in The Mandalorian, and then the next 2 episodes are Mandalorian episodes. So I was like, oh man, this is just terrible. And the thing as well, like, I've seen a few people kind of going, "Oh, Boba Fett, they've ruined Boba Fett in it because he's not like badass or whatever," and all this kind of stuff. As these kind of like crybabies always say, they always have to measure masculinity against like people. Masculinity is people not caring about things and beating people up and having no remorse. That's masculinity for a lot of people. But I don't care about that because Boba Fett has always been pathetic. Has always been pathetic.
Well, yeah, actually, because I don't understand the status of Boba Fett. Because I remember loving Boba Fett when I was a kid, but I don't really understand why. Because basically, he shows up in the second movie, he gets his ass whooped in the third movie.
Yeah, he's useless in the third movie.
Yeah.
He just looks cool, right? Because in the second one, he's just standing around, looking cool. Gives a bit of sass to Darth Vader, so you're like, oh yeah, this guy might have something about him. Then the third one, he is useless. He's absolutely useless. He tries to fight Luke Skywalker, fails miserably, and gets thrown into the side of a barge. And and that's it. And then people say, oh well, there's all these like comics and cartoons.
Yeah, I think that's
comics, but the comics and books, none of them are canon anymore, so it doesn't matter.
No, and that's the thing. I think that's what it is, because here, when I was a kid, I would read the Star Wars comic. It came out I think there was one, when I was a kid, it came out like every other month. So it was called like The Adventure of the Month, or, you know, and one month it would be Indiana Jones, and the other month it would be a Star Wars, and then it would alternate. So I think I got a lot of my Boba Fett love from the Star Wars comic.
I can get that. I can get like how people would have liked it from all that kind of stuff. But when you're just going off like what is purely canon now and for what most people see, which is the movies, right? Because, I mean, he's in the Clone Wars cartoons as well when he's a kid. And he's not that, they do a good job of him in that as well, but most people wouldn't have seen it. So when you go back for like what most people will watch, the visual things, and for most people, he was an annoying child in Attack of the Clones.
Yeah, he was.
And then was useless in Return of the Jedi. They've kind of, that episode of The Mandalorian season two, when he first appears in, and he's like, shooting people with rockets and all that kind of stuff, is by far the best the Boba Fett had ever been up until that point. By far, right? It wasn't even come close. I don't know. Like, it's kind of a weird. I don't know if that was some kind of like, because obviously they planned it before COVID, but I don't know if it was some kind of scheduling thing where they couldn't have the people they wanted to do season three of The Mandalorian right away. Because the last episode, because in both of the episodes, Mandalorians, and he doesn't take his mask off. So it's obviously not Pedro Pascal. He does the voice, but he's obviously not in the suit. They have a legacy character appears quite a lot in the last episode, which is obviously done with CGI.
Yeah.
It's actually done with deep fake technology, apparently. Yeah, it's standing with deep fake technology.
Okay.
So a lot of like, the actors that they wanted to probably use weren't available. So they'd probably just be like, let's just do this so we can keep it, so it's not off streaming for 2 years, which would have been the case. Cause I think they're only filming season three of Mandalorian at the moment. So it's probably not going to be till maybe Christmas.
Maybe a Christmas episode.
Yeah, that'd be great, wouldn't it? Christmas Mando. But that'd be something to look forward to. Wheel of Time. So we got Lord of the Rings. Hopefully, Wheel of Time, Christmas Mando. The year's over already.
Yeah.
Well, they started doing all the promotional stuff for the Lord of the Rings series already, which is crazy because they're doing it so much earlier than I know Wheel of Time has been really successful for them, and it's brought some viewers to Amazon Prime. So I know why they're putting more of a spotlight onto Lord of the Rings, because it's going to bring way more, as we talked about last time, it's going to bring in way more viewers, which is only going to help Wheel of Time. But you'd think that out of the two, Wheel of Time needed more of a early buzz.
I think so. I was talking to my workmate who loves the Wheel of Time. We were talking about that today. About the TV show, and we were saying like, well, the TV show ended up being very good and popular, but you kind of miss, I mean, at least around here, that there's nobody to talk to about it, because it's not like the kids here at the school that I work on, they don't know what it is. They haven't watched it. But I'm thinking that at least in Sweden, maybe like an older generation of fantasy readers have watched it. But I think you were talking about early on, is like the measure of success of the show would have been if there would be memes.
Yeah.
And we have yet, I don't know, I haven't seen any memes.
I've seen some, but like a lot of them would be in the usual places that you kind of see it. But the funny thing about that though is that there's been none for season two of Witcher either. Because that really, there was loads for season one. And obviously with the toss a coin for your Witcher song and everything as well. But season two is kind of, apart from like annoying really, really kind of the hardcore fans of the Witcher books, it's just kind of come and gone without making much of an impression at all. Like no one's talking about it. There aren't any articles about it anymore. And the thing is, with Wheel of Time, there is still people, like there is articles like the one from Bloomberg yesterday and other things. So it has made some kind of an impact. But I do think that one of the major criticisms of the season, and it's the same as season two of The Witcher actually, is that it lacked a little bit of charm. In some places where they could have had a little bit of humor and a bit more of a light touch. And I know it's like one of my favorite episodes. Like I think it generally gets better as it goes on, but I think one of the until the last episode. But one of my favorite episodes where it was really starting to hit its stride was episode 3, which is the one where it's mainly random Matt in the amalgamation of all the inns and towns that he went to in the Isle of World. And you know, there's a bit of humor in that one as well. There's a bit of banter between them all and everything.
Yeah. I think when Tom enters, the one thing I feel like, if we're going to talk about the show, that I felt that was lost a little bit, is that, like you say, the charm. I mean, I find that Matt hits his stride fairly early on as like the Matt that we all know and love, but he doesn't get to be that character for very long, because obviously he gets the knife and he starts getting sick.
Yeah.
And he's basically just like this ghoul for most of the half of the show
until he decided never to come back. that's the problem with Matt, isn't it? Anyway, that's more the problem we're gonna have, that they couldn't get unless they, because this is one of the things that I kind of roll my eyes at, where you get people that are like, it's completely different from the books. It's like it's not the same story beats, and like unless they changed it completely, they can't get away from the fact that Matt changes character very, very rapidly and becomes this thing that's affected by the dagger, and that Perrin doesn't have anything to do. Like, and they try to fix that in a way, like they try to give Perrin more kind of trauma and more of an impetus. And obviously with the COVID shutdown and then Barney Harris not coming back, it kind of changed the plans for the last couple of episodes where his arc was going. But you can't get away from that when you're adapting the Eye of the World, because that's what it is in the books. There's nothing else for them to do. Like, you know, they can't go in any other directions. Like, Matt has to get the dagger. The dagger has to be brought in. It has to affect Matt in some way, and it's going to make him unlikable.
Yeah, and it has to be what draws the forces of evil. I mean, that would what locates.
Yeah.
Them.
But I still think there was room for a bit of more levity, I think, in certain, because I think they did try it to an extent, because say that episode had quite a lot of humor in it and it worked, and it wasn't like slapstick humor or anything like that. It wasn't like out of place or out of tone. It was just like nice interplay between the characters. You know, even between Rand and Matt, where like Matt's really cold and he's like, can I have your coat? And he's like, you know, people are going to write stories about us. You'll be the man that walks when a little bit chilly and all this. And it's like, you got jokes now, have you? And, you know, that's not how Road works. I've seen that meme quite a lot that come around, you know, where he says like, oh, roads lead to Tavlon. It's like, that's not how roads work.
No, it's but it was also, it's interesting because I was thinking about that. Because when Rand first meets Loyal, there's a yeah. little of the back and forth because he's there just is, like, yeah. you're an Aielman. I was like, I'm not an Aielman. I'm from the Two Rivers. Oh, an Aielman from the Two Rivers, but I'm not an Aielman.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's a little bit of that there too. But that's what I was thinking of, like, because like if you look at that Game of Thrones, or you look at Lord of the Rings, the movies, there are certain characters that you can have that stand out. I mean, obviously in Game of Thrones, you have a handsome Jon Snow, or you have Daenerys. But then you also have the little person. I forgot what his name was.
Tyrion.
Yeah, Tyrion. And those are like staple characters that people can like gravitate to. And yeah. I think in the Wheel of Time so far, there hasn't been that one character that viewers like can gravitate to, and it's like, you know what, this is like, to quote them. Or I think, I don't know if you, I mean, obviously that might have been Rand if they had focused on him being the dragon to begin with.
Yeah, maybe. But then again as well, like Rand is just, even in the books, like he doesn't do anything memorable, things happen to him.
Yeah.
He doesn't particularly do anything memorable or say anything memorable, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So, no, I get it.
So it's one of those kind of, I mean, I think, you know, they've kind of hung the hat on Rosamund Pike as Moraine, which I think is fine because I think she does a great job. And she has a couple of like good lines, and especially the episode with Swan Sanchez.
Mm.
Very compelling TV. It's well written and it's well acted and everything, but she's very serious.
Yeah.
You know, and like, I mean, in that episode, she does have a couple of like really good lines, like, you know, the on your knees bit is really good, and the Swan Sanchez only waits for one woman and it isn't you line is quite good as well. But that's the only kind of like flashes of
anything
that we get from her throughout the whole.
Yeah, I think the problem is that she doesn't come across as so likable, because Tyrion came across as very, I mean, obviously he's drunk and he's serious, but he's also, he's witty and he's intelligent. And I think sometimes the Moraine character becomes kind of like flat, not three-dimensional enough.
Yeah, she's very one note. And again, even in the books, that's the same until Shadow Rising is when you kind of start to see a lot more.
And we say, if we were going to talk about the book, if we were going to talk about the book now, that was something, because that kind of like happens in the chapters right now.
Right, yeah.
Is where you get more info. And even about Tom, and I think that's... yeah. But
it's just such a difficult series to adapt, and I know like a lot, there's some people, because again, like if you compare like the user scores for Witcher season 2 and Wheel of Time, the user scores higher for Wheel of Time, like the actual fans of Witcher really didn't like season 2 Witcher, and it's funny because you see these like people that really didn't like Wheel of Time saying, oh, I wish it was more like the Witcher season 2. It's like, well, the fans of The Witcher don't like it, right? When you say like it's a really difficult series to adapt, you get these people going, no, it isn't. You just do it exactly as it is in the books. It's like, well, that's not going to work for a multitude of reasons. But the reason it's so difficult is because a lot of the things that people really love about The Wheel of Time and love about the characters don't happen until the fourth book, right?
No.
Lots of things, there's lots of events that happen, and everyone likes the Great Hunt. But the Great Hunt is so Rand orientated again, and like to the point where Moraine is barely in it, Lan is barely in it, Perrin and Matt are barely in it. You know, Egwene and the girls have a few flashes, but then all their storyline is basically repeated in the third book again. You know, it's just so Rand centric the first two books, and then when Rand isn't in it as much in the third one, he is literally the MacGuffin of the book.
Yeah,
right. It's all about Rand. So it's difficult to do and to give anyone any kind of more limelight than bringing things in early, but then it has to work within the storyline then as well, which is difficult to do as well. So, but I do think I have two like major criticisms with it. One of them is that the charm side of it, I think it could have just been a little bit warmer in some bits. And I think tonally it was, they weren't trying to make it grimdark or like Game of Thrones, but I think it, and I think that was right. But I think in terms of humor, they tried to make everything, the stakes for everyone so high and so serious, which I think is fine. But obviously, if you one of the things that you learn when you're writing, especially if you're having serious moments and serious things, and you need to undercut it sometimes with a bit of humor just to kind of balance it out a little bit. And I think it lacks in that. Maybe there was more like humorous asides between the characters that were filmed but were cut, and that is my other criticism, is that the episodes were too short.
Yeah,
like, I think 8 episodes was fine, but I think that the pilot should have been an hour and a half, and yeah, the last episode should have been an hour and a half, and then if a couple of the episodes needed to be an hour and 10 minutes, then they should be an hour and 10 minutes. It's on streaming. Who cares?
Yeah, exactly. You're not beholden to the news coming on at 10, really.
Exactly.
So, exactly. I mean, I think, so, okay, so those were your major criticisms. Was there anything else like you kind of like really disliked? Like, I don't understand why they made this choice. If we're not talking about, because now I think you were talking about the series as a whole.
Yeah.
Like, afterwards, I mean, I definitely understand the charm part. I totally agree there, and I think that's why we're not seeing a lot of social media stuff that isn't within the realm of in fantasy fandom, is that there wasn't a strong enough charming character that men or women or whoever it is could hang their hat on and say that this is an intriguing enough character. I wish that Matt, they could have let Matt be that character for a little bit longer.
Yeah. I think he will be in the second season. I think that's one of the benefits of them changing character. So and having to kind of, from what I understand, that they're basically just picking him up from book 3 and doing that storyline. So I think there is that benefit of that, where they can just kind of just have that Matt from now on.
Yeah.
It's a new actor. Basically going to be kind of a new character, and they can just kind of have that. So I think that might work well in season 2. Like, hopefully they can get Tom into it more, but I have a feeling that Tom might be one of the characters that gets killed off early, because I know there's been talk that there is going to be some characters killed off that make it to the end of the book, so I'll make it to the last book anyway. That are going to be killed off early, because there are some characters that kind of have big moments in the first 4 or 5 books, and then they're just kind of there for the rest of the series. I believe that some of them might be getting killed off, which is why the multiple fake out deaths in the last episode was there, apparently to kind of warm people up for it. But yeah, in terms of like things that I didn't agree with, there wasn't any changes that I didn't agree with or I disliked to a huge extent. Episode 8 is its own beast, I think. Actually, anything from the end of episode 6 onwards, you have to kind of take a lot of those changes with a big pinch, not a pinch of salt, that's the wrong term, but you've kind of given the benefit of the doubt, because
yeah,
I don't think a lot of them were what they were intending to do, and they had to kind of do things, and some of them worked and some of them didn't. And I think what happened then is, like, obviously with, so they shut down first when they were filming the end of episode 6, right? And then they came back and finished off episode 6, and then they had to shut down again for a longer period of time, which was like a huge period of time. It was like 6 or 7 months, I think, they closed down, and then came back to film 7 and 8 with huge restrictions because of COVID. So they had to like change the plans and why they were going to go and film stuff, because like stuff for the blight, they were going to go to the Canary Islands. And
yeah.
So they had to build the set. They couldn't do crowd scenes. So like the plans for the Battle at Tarwin's Gap had to change. And there's concept art that's come out of what that was going to be like, and it was going to be a lot more kind of involved and everything, you know, it was going to be more localized. Daniel Henney couldn't come back to do much in 7 and 8. He can only come back for days at a time, which is why his character is basically not in it anymore, right? And obviously, Barney Harris didn't come back at all. So, and it was, you know, not something that was planned. It wasn't something where they could have recast a new actor in the time being and kept it. And that would have been weird anyway, just changing characters.
Very much like an American soap opera where, like,
yeah.
It's like all of a sudden somebody comes back differently.
The changes then, like, so they had to go back and reshoot the end of episode 6 and have Matt not go through the gate, which then causes a lot of problems, I think, in terms of like, why did they bring Loyal? He just comes just to read one signpost, whereas obviously he came before to open the gates.
Yeah.
But they've had to change that because they're like, we have to do it with the power, because otherwise we could just open up and go and get Matt, right? So she's like, we have to use power, but if we use the power, then Matt and Shin will come and do this. So there's all these knock-on effects. And I think they handled that quite well. I know a few people didn't like the fact that Moraine was the one that opened it, but I think if it was just Leaf, they could just keep opening it and closing it and going and talk to Matt and say, why aren't you coming? And they couldn't do that. And then I think episode 7 handles all the changes really, really well. I think it's a really strong episode. You can see a lot of the characters are kind of more, the actors, sorry, are more at ease with the characters a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think they had that time where they filmed the first 6 episodes, they went away and kind of like had a, you know, let it sink in a little bit more. They're a bit, lot more, the younger character actors are a lot more confident. Faldara looked great. Min was good. The reveal of Rand as the dragon worked well. And then episode 8 is the one where all these problems that they've had with Barney Harris dropping out with COVID really kind of came. And I think there's some really strong aspects in episode 8. Like I love all the changes that they've done with Rand and Ishmael.
There was an article about that too. That I saw yesterday, why they called him the man, what the intentions of that was. And it's interesting that they chose to pick in Faris, who is a Swedish actor.
There's a lot of Swedish actors, and I think you know what it was. I think it's because Faris, Alexander Karim, who is Luz Telamon, also Swedish. I'm blanking on his name now, but the guy who played Lord Angelmar is Swedish as well, as is Lady Amelisa, and they're all from the same talent agency. It must have just been who can travel in and out of Prague,
probably, because it's interesting, because Faris isn't considered a very good Swedish actor,
right?
He's kind of like because he's in Chernobyl. But I mean, before then, he's just basically, he's like a comedic actor here in Sweden, in a lot of like, because I mean, he's not Swedish per se. I mean, he's an immigrant, so he plays a lot of, and he has a very strong Middle Eastern accent when he speaks Swedish. So he's in a lot of like, what would you call it? Farce type movies in Sweden, and so I mean, he's not considered very, very talented.
Yeah, because Alexander Karim is, though, isn't he? He's kind of like
Swedish actor. And actually, Alexander Karim, which is interesting with him, is that he plays more in foreign movies than he actually plays in Swedish movies.
Okay,
he's kind of Joel Kinnaman.
Right. Okay.
Joel Kinnaman has been in like 2 Swedish movies, and then the rest just like. And then he became famous because he was in that one, the American version of that Danish TV, The Killing.
Oh, The Killing, yeah.
That's where he became famous.
Yeah, but I think that's what it might have been like, because it was funny that like there were a lot of these people were being cast, and it was a lot of them were Swedish backgrounds, and it was like seemed like it was the same age, and they must have just been looking at who can we get in to get into Prague, because obviously Prague was very, very strict while they were filming these episodes in terms of like who was allowed in and out of the country. But it's funny with Fares is that I knew him because of, until I'd saw him in Chernobyl, but before that, the only reason that I knew him for is because his brother, Joseph Fares, is a game, well, he used to be a film director, but he makes games, he's got quite a wild personality. But
he's of the two, he's more
famous, yeah.
A bit more famous,
He made a game called A Way Out, which stars Fares Fares. He's one of the people that you play.
Yeah.
So when I saw the leaked photos that came out before the episode that it had Fares Fares in it, and I was like, it's the guy from A Way Out. It's Joseph Fares' brother. But he was really good, and I thought like the changes they made there.
Yeah.
See, some people didn't like it because they think, oh, you make they're making Rand less special, because obviously in either world he does everything, but he doesn't know how he's doing everything, and it's confusing for the reader a lot of time as well. And as well, it's in the rest of the books, as we're getting into now, as you're seeing now with The Shadow Rising, is a lot more of an ensemble cast, right? It's not all about Rand anymore.
No.
Whereas the first three books kind of are. So they wanted to update that and make the season about all the characters. So you can't have just one character doing everything in the last episode.
No, absolutely.
And they focused on Rand at the eye with Ishmael, and that was all really, really good. The acting was really good. The visions were great as well, because that actually ties into something that happens in the last book. It borrows a little bit from Egwene's accepted test in the second book as well. You know, it really does a really good job of molding a lot of things. That is the Wheel of Time into those scenes. I think that they're really, really good. I mean, the rest of the episode really suffered because of all the other issues. I liked the Pan and Thane stuff, like him coming into it. And I liked how he was like kept popping up in every single episode. You'd hear his whistle, or you'd see him in the background somewhere. But I think, so in isolation, like how he is and how he acts and everything is good. But that storyline wasn't meant for Perrin. That storyline was meant for Matt. And it's quite clear it was meant for Matt as well, because they were building up for that. They were building up. So like, you know, there's darkness inside of him. There's this. He has that scene in the first episode where he's with Pad and Thane. He's talking. The building that up. But because he's not there, they've gone, well, we have to give this to Perrin. So Perrin's arc then changes. And whatever that was going to be changed as well. I think he was going to be more involved in the Battle of Tarwyn's Gap, but the whole of Tarwyn's Gap changed because of COVID. So you see all these like things where they've had to just shuffle everything. And I don't think it's really fair to kind of, there's legitimate criticisms that you can have of the season. And you know, there's legitimate criticisms of episode eight, as well. But I think there's some things where you kind of look at it and go, look, I don't think they had a lot of options of how to do this.
And I think that's true of any, because I was looking, the one series that I was thinking of that had huge numbers was Dexter, New Blood. It had like the highest numbers of like a final episode or something like that ever. But then also that's linear. I mean, obviously that's on TV. It's not streaming. But I mean, you can see that too, because I mean, obviously Dexter New Blood tries to compensate or tries to rectify some of the mistakes that were made in the final Dexter season before that, and even the TV show in a lot of ways. But then there's also a lot of holes. So, I mean, there's criticism for everything. And I think if you look at it, and I think that we've said before when we've had guests on, when you're somebody who's deep into the fandom, you'll have more criticism probably than a person that comes in it as new, because obviously somebody's not going to know that the Perrin and Pad and Thane, their storyline wasn't meant for them.
But I think as well, like, I think even just looking at it as part of the language of the actual show, you can see that that was, even the show, you can see that was meant for Matt, because the Matt is all about the dagger, Matt is all about pan of pain. And then obviously having this the horn just underneath the throne as well, because you have to, like, you have to get this going. Obviously that was going to be done in a different kind of way. I don't think it was going to be at the Eye, but I think it was going to be done somewhere else. It was probably going to be at Tarwyn's Gap. They'll probably have, like, where that battlement was, they're probably going to find it there probably or something. But they just, they were like, we can only have a certain amount of people in these scenes. And then they couldn't use real Trollocs or people in suit for Trollocs anymore. They had to do CGI Trollocs, and you can really tell because the budget wasn't there for CGI at that point. But I think I've seen that in a lot of things that have been coming out in the last few months that have been filmed during COVID. You can really see where, especially during that part, that period where it was in between, during the very, very intense bits where Delta was out and there was like, I mean, the Book of Boba Fett, for example, we were talking about before, looks so much cheaper
than Mandalorian. That's what I've understood from people who have watched it.
It just seems empty as well, because like there's just, they can't have crowd scenes when they were doing it. And just people working from home to do special effects just isn't that. Like, you know, Mando season 2, the last episode where Luke Skywalker appears, like that was all done at home, his face, and it looked awful.
Yeah,
right. And this is Marvel. This is Disney that have the de-aging in all the films that they have nowadays, and it looks great most of the time. They had Samuel Jackson de-age for the entire movie of Captain Marvel, and it looks seamless. But then, because they had some dude working at home, it just can't be done. And what else was I watching as well? Oh yeah, Witcher season 2 was filmed during COVID, and you can tell because like, there's some things that are in its favour because the static sets, same with Game of Thrones, so it saves on budget and it saves on, like, you know, having to move things around so much. But again, you can see that it's building towards something all season. And then in the last episode, it's basically four witches fighting CGI dinosaurs in a room. Because, like, they were stuck with what they could do.
Yeah,
like,
you know? Yeah.
So you can see these kind of things, these issues, and I just hope that like season 2 kind of like they can figure some of those things out. But
yeah, I was going to ask that about that. I mean, are they going to, or is season 2 going to suffer the last episodes of season 1?
Maybe. Like, I think it's the last episode really, because I think, you know, 7 is probably the best episode, maybe up there with 4 or 7 for me, probably the best 2 episodes. And I think 5 and 6 are very similar kind of quality to 4 and 7 as well, and 3 is up there too. But I think, you know, obviously restrictions have kind of eased as time has gone on. They waited until February before they went back to finish to film episode 7 or 8, or at least 8, which is going to be like a big action one. And restrictions are pretty much gone now everywhere. So that's a good thing. As far as we know, they've not had to recast one of the main characters midway through and change the entire plot and various characters' arcs. So that's good.
That's very good. I mean,
just on that point, the only worry that I've ever really had about Wheel of Time season 2 is, because I think it's easy, I think it's fair enough to adapt, and I think you can see where they're going now with it, with where season 1 has ended, how the meshing books 2 and 3 together. They're basically taking some storylines from 2, some storylines from 3, and going, okay, you lot go on your own way, and they're all going to meet at the end. And, you know, even if they don't meet at the end, you can still have some of the characters maybe at Falme and some characters at Tyr at the same time. And you could have, I know, like, one of the prophecies of the dragon is Rand appearing in the sky fighting Ishmael above Falme, but you could do that in Tyr and just have that projection go everywhere across the entire continent, so everyone sees it in every single town, right? Which would be more impactful, because then people would be like, the dragon is back, which is what you want it to be at the end of that season. So I can see how they're going to adapt it. I think that's fine. The only, like, the only worry that I've had about season two since they announced that it was being greenlit and they were filming it before season one had come out, was that it had been mainly written before they were able to see any reaction for season one. And that is not like when you have some people like saying, there's too many black people, or there's too many women doing stuff, or, you know, these pointless things that are just stupid and they just shouldn't be allowed to be.
So like season two is all like white people.
Yeah, exactly. But like, people aren't going to pay any attention to that anyway. It's just these people that say it about the same things, every single thing. They have these little like communities on Discord and Reddit and whatever else. And anything that comes out that has like what they say politicized agendas, which basically means being inclusive and diverse, is they go around and they review bomb these things. They do it everywhere. You can see it everywhere, right? That's just what they do. They have all these accounts ready to set up. I don't mean paying attention to them. It's like paying attention to people that are giving balanced criticism, like, you know, not enough humor maybe, or the episodes are too short in some bits. Some of the scenes in some places, the lighting is a little bit off, so it kind of looks a bit too much like a set. These kind of things, right, are things that are valid points that like a production usually will have. The season one will come out, there'll be a month or so, and then they'll go back and film season two, and you can kind of look at it and adjust to things and say, okay, what worked and what didn't work. They didn't have that chance for season two. Now they have on the break coming back for episode 7 and 8. So obviously they can react to it for episode 7 and 8, which again is what they did with episode 7 last time, because they had that bit where they could kind of go back and look at it themselves and go, okay, what worked and what didn't. And then obviously other issues arose then. But hopefully there's a little bit of, I think Amazon have gone on record and said they've increased the budget for season two, which is good, because budget wasn't that big really, like, you know, when you think about it. I know a lot of people say, oh, you know, it gets more than season one Game of Thrones, but season one of Game of Thrones came out 11 years ago when you adjust it for inflation. And it's not as wide ranging. There's only 3 sets that Game of Thrones, right? So hopefully they've got a bit of money where they can go back in and also look at these things for the things they've already shot and go back and tweak them if they need to. Because again, it's one of those things, it's like they can't really react to anything that's been said until now when they're going back to do these. And then again, a lot of things has already been budgeted, so it's hard to kind of react to it, to some of the valid criticism. So you won't see those reactions really until season 3.
If they do a season 3, that is.
I think Amazon, like, it's been so successful for them, and it's like, you know, as we were saying before, it was the biggest new show in the US of 2021. It's Amazon's biggest show new ever. You know, it's doing really, really well for them. I think with Lord of the Rings coming in first before season two is only going to help, because people then will check out the Wheel of Time.
But what about The Boys? When is that coming out? Season 3?
The Boys is the summer, I think, as well. But I think The Boys, like, I don't think The Boys will have much of a huge impact on.
No, I mean, it's a different, obviously it's a different demographic for The Boys, I think. But I mean, it's still, I mean, The Boys is a dynamite property, and so was Wheel of Time for a while when it came in the comic book world. So
I just don't think The Boys would bring in, especially now with season 3, I think if The Boys was going to bring in any new viewers to Amazon Prime, it would have already have done it. Lord of the Rings is the one where it's going to, like, you'll see the there'll be, like, after the first couple of episodes, there'll be loads of articles from Amazon saying we have got 10 million new subscribers, you know, that kind of thing, right? And then those people that come in, they'll probably will be fantasy fans, and I'm sure Wheel of Time will be heavily advertised at those people that come in. So they'll watch that, they'll check out season 1, and then season two will be ready to go. And that's only a good thing for Wheel of Time as well. So I think it's going to do really well. So I wouldn't be, I think season three is a given at this point. Like it's season four is then it's like four and five. You have to see if that trend is going up. But yeah, I think on the whole, like, what things did you enjoy about it?
Well, I mean, in the beginning, I was a little bit, I mean, we talked about it a little bit, and I was a little bit hesitant because I didn't really care for like the quality of one and two. I thought it was a little bit, the acting was a little bit too wooden. I think it was I wasn't too impressed with the sets and the costumes and everything like that. But I mean, it grew on me, and by three and four and five, I think I really, really started liking it. And what I really thought was the strength of it was that it became, the first time I saw Lord of the Rings in the movie theaters, because I was there at the premiere, not the big premiere, but I mean, when they first, premiered in the States for the public. And it's like how like familiar everything like became, this world. And then I think that's what fantasy is supposed to do to you. I mean, it's supposed to be escapism. You get to a place and it's like all, you know, you get comfortable. I mean, obviously I wouldn't have wanted to live in the Wheel of Time world because of like Trollocs and White Cloaks and shit like that. But I mean, they felt like there was a familiarity, and I thought it was really, I mean, in the end, I thought it was really well done. And I think that the changes that they did were from the book were, you know, really good. Would I have liked to see the Green Man? Yes, maybe. But I think it was, I mean, I just really liked, and then I did like the way at first when you see them use the one power, I was thinking like, what is this? But then I think the episode where you first see Loghain use it, I thought that was really, I liked it. I thought it was really well done. I liked the kind of shadowy figures that whispers in his ears. And I like Loghain. I mean, yes, again, would I've liked to see Billy Zane in that role, a long-haired Billy Zane, maybe. I liked the Loghain character, yeah. What they did with him. I don't know if I cared for the actor that played him.
Right.
But I mean, had I seen, I think I liked, like on paper, I liked the Loghain character, but then I'm not really sure I was, but maybe it's because I'm biased and I would have hoped for Billy Zane as it. But I might have wanted to see somebody else in it. I don't know if he was totally convincing in that role for me. But I mean, I liked that it was, because I think in a lot of times, Eye of the World, the book, it doesn't like tug at your heartstrings. It doesn't, you don't get so emotionally involved in it. But the show did that, especially like after the first like real battle scene with all the Aes Sedai, where all the people were being buried and the death of when Loghain was trying to escape and everything like that. I think that, and Stepan's role as a warder dealing with the grief and the death of his Aes Sedai, I think was very well done, because yeah, it gave an extra dimension to it. And I for real thought that Lan was actually going to die there. This is like, that's impossible. I know, I mean, I obviously knew where it was going. I knew what they were going to do with Nynaeve when she came running in.
Yeah.
That was quite obvious, mainly because if I hadn't read the books, I probably wouldn't have known. But I was like, it's impossible that she's going to heal him. He's dead.
That would have been, do you imagine if they'd killed him off?
I don't know. It's just like, because I was for a second there, I was doubting. It was really, are they really going to kill him? And then I liked the travelers. I'd read actually for the I can't remember what their names are, but you know, the travelers, so that Perrin and
Egwene. I thought they were really effective as well. There were some really nice scenes. I was actually surprised by how much I liked Arryn, because yeah. I don't like him in the books at all. That was that thing as well, like what I was talking about before, about that little bit of charm. Like the guy who played Darren McCormack, who was in Peaky Blinders,
yeah,
he played him with a real nice light touch, bit of, you know, which I think really, really helped elevate those scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I liked it. and I think we've said this before, I didn't care for Perrin, but I mean, I don't care for Perrin, but I didn't actually think that I wasn't totally convinced by the actor. You know, because to me, like an actor like Will Smith, you know, Will Smith plays a lot of different characters. He's played a lot of different roles, but in the end, he's always Will Smith. He's always the Fresh Prince. That's how he plays every single role, no matter if it's in iRobot or in Pursuit of Happiness.
He hates those robots. Don't come near him, no robots.
No, exactly. But it's like
iRobot. I mean, that's the first. When that came out, I was about 18 or 19, or maybe 20 when that film came out. And I'd read Asimov and everything. And yeah. I think it was after Lord of the Rings, and I was happy with the adaptation of Lord of the Rings. And I think that was the very, very first time that I can remember in my life where I was like so disappointed with an adaptation or something. I hadn't built it up into my mind to be wary of the fact that it was like Will Smith doing Asimov and be like, this isn't going to be good, right?
No, and that is the problem. Even when he's in what that movie that he wrote, that him and his After Earth,
the Scientologist film,
yeah, and it's just like he plays the same character. It's like even when he's in I Am Legend, which is a horrible adaptation of that book as well. It's like he's always got like Converse. He's always listening to like Bob Marley, and it's just like he's too urban, and it's like you can't be this urban in every single movie because your character should possibly have a different background. Yeah. Obviously, and I felt the same way a little bit with Perrin. He felt a little bit too urban.
I think I'm pretty good at separating the source of material from an adaptation generally, because like, you know, I've worked on adaptations and I studied film and I write books. So I know how they are different, and I know, so I'm always quite forgiving to them. But I can separate them, but I have such a difficult time, I think, separating my disdain of Perrin, the character in the books, with the character in the TV show. So I don't know if that colours my perception of him, because again, out of all of the characters and out of all of the actors, I would say that Perrin was the weak point, but I don't know if that is just because of the character and where he is at the time, or if it's the portrayal, or if it's the writing of him as well. Because it just came across as very, very one note to me. And even when he had those bits, the quiet moments, compared to where he was getting kind of angry, there wasn't that much of a difference either. It was just more or less the same progression. So I'm gonna remain on the fence and see if it's any season two. Because I kind of want to just see like what it's like when he's given a bit more sleep. If he is being given the the lead role in The Hunt for the Horn, especially at the start, because obviously he wants to kind of, obviously what they're going to try and do with that is that, I think the original plan was that Matt was going to give Padam Thane the dagger.
Yeah.
Padam Thane was going to do the thing, and then Thane was going to stab Matt with the dagger, and that was why they had to go after it. And then Perrin was probably going to go with him with Loial, and Rand's story would have remained kind of the same. I think he's just going to meet up with our favourite Celine at some point, and she's going to try and get him to go. Instead of her trying to get him to get the horn, she's going to be going to Kalimdor, because the Dark One isn't dead as you think he is, and the only way to stop him is by getting Kalimdor. So he's going to go that way, and they're probably all going to meet up in Caer Hyne or something like that, right? But obviously sort of stabbed Loial instead to give Perrin this thing, like you have to go and get it to save Loial, which again is another weird thing because they've had no real relationship. Right? But that's just one of the weird things of the adaptation, of the issues that they've had. So I think that's a good move for him. I think that's good to kind of get him out on his own, to give him some kind of... Because I think as well that from what I hear that Elias is being merged with another character.
Yeah, you were talking about that last time.
And that's going to help him with that kind of you know, the learn more about the wolves, and like, you know, we can sniff out the danger, and you can find the violence and all that kind of stuff from where Padan Thane has been. So I think that's good, and I think it's going to really bring Perrin's character forward a lot quicker than what the books do, because you don't really get to see him going out on his own until book four, which again is a Wheel of Time problem for a lot of the characters when you're trying to adapt it. And hopefully, you know, we'll see what Marcus Rutherford can do, because and that's one of the things that I really liked about episode 7 and 8 was that Yosha Stradowski plays Rand really came into his own as the Rand character, to the point where I think it was like he was actually underplaying him to a point to just to blend in the previous episodes. Like, I think in episode 3 you get quite a lot of flashes from him of like charm and a little bit.
Yeah, well, he meets Loyal too, I think. I got I thought he was less Anakin Skywalker.
But in 7 and 8, like, he's spending a lot of his time with Rosamund Pike, and then he's with Faris Farrez, who are, like, you know, even though he might not be as well thought of in Sweden, he's like an experienced actor. And Rosamund Pike is obviously and he's holding his own against them. You know, he's actually, he doesn't look out of place. He looks like he suits those scenes, and being with that kind of caliber of actor. Whereas, like, it's harder for a younger actor to kind of stand out in scenes where you're acting against people that are so experienced. For Perrin's actor, Marcus Rutherford, most of the scenes that he's in, he is with someone who is more experienced and will be, you know.
Yeah.
And he's just in the background. So I think it's going to be good for him in season 2 to get out there on his own. We'll see what he does. But I was really... There's a lot of stuff that I really liked and really enjoyed about it. Like, I'd give the season probably, like, on the whole, maybe 7.5 out of 10, 8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm. 7.5 is what it has on it, the score on IMDb. It's like 7.2 or something like that, maybe.
Yeah. It's been review bombed as well, though. Like, you can never, you can't really get a look at those kind of things. Like, it's just these days, anyway, you can't.
I would also probably around 7 and 8. I think it would, when all was said and done, I think I was left very, very satisfied with what I'd seen. As I said, there's always something that's going to that I would have seen differently. As I said, like, I think, you know, Perrin's, I think it was his the way Perrin was acted, you know, how he acted that role,
right,
was a little bit too, it wasn't enough. It didn't feel like it was a character that would have been in a fantasy movie. It felt more like he was playing a character that would have been in a modern, urban setting, like a street thug in an urban setting. It was kind of like the sense that I got.
We'll see how it changes.
It was the same with Nynaeve, though. I didn't think I wasn't totally convinced by the actress who played Nynaeve. I thought that she was a little bit wooden as well, especially in her interaction with, like, Lan and other actors.
I liked her. I thought she did a really good job. I liked her. But, yeah, it's all subjective as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Do we want to talk about Loyal's makeup for a sec?
You want to, yeah.
I don't know if I want to. Because that was something that took me out of it too. I don't know how they would have done it any differently, because I mean, even when I've seen Loyal, like, drawn in, like, comic books, it kind of looks like, how in the hell would they adapt this to a real? And the thing is, like, when you read in the book, and his ears always move.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's like the Warder's color changing cloaks that they got rid of. It sounds good on paper, and it's great. It's a great thing to write as, like, the ears twitching and the nose twitching and the eyebrows drooping is a great thing to write in a book.
It's color
to put in there, like, you know, for instead of speech tags, which is basically why he's done it, is that, you know, we can say, like, you know, you can get across how the character is feeling by using these things, right? But it's one of those things. It's like, is it worth the cost of doing it on the screen? And it's the same with the Warder's cloaks. It's like shimmering cloaks. Every single Warder has them. Sounds great, but it would cost a lot of money.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's the thing with Loyal as well. And I saw some criticism saying like, oh, the guy acts really, really well and his voice is really good. I can get over the makeup, but he's just not tall enough. It's like, do you really need him to be 10 foot tall?
Well, the thing is, I would think that a situation, something like that would take you out of the reality of things. Because here, like when you see Rand and Loyal, when they meet each other for the first time, I mean, they're basically the same height, right?
If
Loyal was 10 feet tall, he wouldn't have fit in that library. They would have to like redo the set completely.
And then everyone else would look tiny inside the set. It'd look like hobbits.
It added to that is like, where is the reality in that? Like, how believable does it look like there's a 10-foot creature just hanging around everybody else?
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the peculiar things about Wheel of Time in general, is that how tall everyone is. Like, everyone is a giant, right? I mean, you have the Aiel are all like the women. A short Aiel woman is like 5'11".
Yeah.
6 foot, right? And then like most of the men are like 6'5", 6'6", 6'7". Like Rand is 6'6". Perrin is like 6'5" or something. Like Matt, a normal average guy, is like 6'1". And it's like, why is everyone so tall? And then, but all the women then are all like 5 foot tall.
Yeah.
And like, it's one of those really peculiar things that Robert Jordan did. It's like really tall men, tiny women. Right. And it, when you look at that visually, it's like, how weird would that be?
Yeah,
I'm
thinking that that's got to be a carryover, and I think it needs to be more addressed. More like it's a carryover for the time when he wrote Conan. It must be.
Yeah, it is,
Because when you think of it, he's steeped in sword and sorcery. Really, he is.
Yeah. And there's all these like hulking big men and these little damsels in distress, and it just looks weird. But it has no bearing on any of the characters.
No,
right?
No, definitely not.
The only ones that have to be tall is people that are Aiel, because it's a genetic trait of theirs. And Rand is tall. Like, the only character that's taller than Rand is Perrin, and that's fine. Like, it's fine to have Perrin. People still can be tall everywhere else in the world, right? That was one of the weird criticisms that you kept seeing coming up. Oh, they're not tall enough. Does it matter? Rand's hair isn't red enough. Looks pretty red to me.
It did. I'm colorblind, but I could definitely see that he had red hair anyway.
But there's a lot of things that I really enjoyed about it. Like, I really enjoyed how they brought the Aiel into it earlier. I think it was nice how they kind of was... the pieces were there to kind of figure out that Rand was the dragon earlier on. And they put, like, even without the stuff that they focused on in episode 7, like, you know, when there's the Aiel in the cage, and then Tom has the conversation with Matt, and he starts telling about, you know, like, you can... the red hair is like, you can see, you know, and obviously who's the red-headed person that we know. And then obviously the blood snow scene was really good as well. That was really excellently done.
I like the way they avoided Robert Jordan's tendency to info dump every time a new character came in. So I liked like how, you know, Tom talked about Gentling, and he talked about his nephew, and I mean just like the way they actually explain the world in few words. I mean, it wasn't like the captain of a riverboat that tells the entire story of that region.
Well, that's what happens in the books, though, isn't it? Like, you know, that's the thing why it spends so much time in Emmons Field and in either world, is because every chapter is... So when Rand comes back to, goes to Emmons Field in the morning, it's just a procession of different characters appearing, telling a story about stuff. It's like, here's Padan Thane, he's going to tell us about Loghain and all the trouble in the world. Here's Tom, he's going to tell us a story. Here's Moraine, she's going to tell us a story as well. And that's just like, it's like a complete, like, because goes on that, which just doesn't work for a book. So yeah, they kind of dealt that out when it was relevant. Tom was really good. I think.
Yeah, like, I like Tom a lot.
Episode 3 and 4 that he was in.
His mustaches weren't long enough, though.
Yeah. Four was a great episode in general, but like, and that was the thing as well, that the reason that 4, 5, or 3, 4, some people don't like 5 because they think it's like, but again, it's these kind of people that are like mentioned, show any kind of grief kind of people that. I thought 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 were all very, very strong because they had good A stories and they had B plots then to drive it along. Episode 8 had a really, really good A story, but the B stories weren't great because they were, you could see that they were going together at the last minute to try and fix things. And then episodes 1 and 2 didn't have B stories, and that's why the pacing felt odd, because it was all just A lines of get them out and get them on the road. And I think they suffered a little bit, because I think episode 1 needed that extra 90 minutes, and there's little, sorry, 30 minutes, there's little bits that they could have done, like, that you can see they probably filmed and cut out, like, you know, like when Lan arrives, and people are looking at him suspiciously because, and we see the shot of the Madral coming in covered in rain, but we don't hear about it first. And obviously they shot it, because when Rand and Tam are on the road, there's a disturbance and Rand is looking for something. They should have had just a shadowed character there.
Yeah.
But we think it's, so new viewers think it's Lan when Lan appears, like, oh, that's what that guy is, right? You know what, like it is in the books.
Yeah.
They just didn't do that. But I think that's also as well, the other thing they were a bit worried about was, do we make this too much like Lord of the Rings? So they barreled through the first 2 episodes to get through all that bit, which is the most Lord of the Rings like bits, to get past it, to go like, look at all this stuff that isn't like Lord of the Rings that we have in this series. But the first episode really suffered for that. And I think the Shadar Logoth bit suffered for it as well, because it was just like, we're here, we need to leave right away.
Yeah, I was a little bit, yeah, they should have been there longer. It was a bit disappointing. I mean, but I mean, overall, I think it was a really strong show.
I think it's that's the thing. That's the thing with the first 2 episodes, is that they cut out any B plots, which are the things that help with pacing. They help with the rest of setting things up, and they had those in the other episodes. And you can see the difference, for me anyway, the difference in quality in the first 3 episodes between episode 3.
Oh yeah, and 1, 2. I agree.
It really is a big jump up. I just think they just needed that extra time in that first episode, because I think that the pieces are all there. But it's just, they're in such a rush to kind of say, this isn't Lord of the Rings, right? Get rid of anything that's kind of like Lord of the Rings, and anything else, just get through it and get into these bits where we can just say, this isn't like Lord of the Rings. And I think that's what they're doing as well in the series as a whole. They're trying to get to Shadow Rising as quickly as possible, which I think is fair enough for a lot of reasons. We talked about the similarities between books 2 and 3 so much that it just wouldn't really work as an adaptation. But there is so much fresh material that is unlike anything else that is in Shadow Rising onwards, that it makes sense for them to try and get to that as soon as possible. But they can't really get to it before season 3 is done. And so they need to kind of just, at some points, they should have just let the thing breathe a little bit and give it a little bit of space to settle, particularly in the first 2 episodes.
No, agreed. Well, as we're winding down, we heard that Rift War is going to be made into a show. What do you know about that? Do you know anything about it?
Do I know anything about it? What, Rift War in general?
I just saw a post about it.
Yeah, it's funny. I was watching a live Q&A with Raymond E. Feist a week ago.
And yeah, well, I was there too.
He was there, and he mentioned something about something, not being able to talk about something, and then that was what it was. But yeah, it's at the very early stage by the sounds of it. It's just, it's been optioned by a production company. So there'll be what happens then is similar to the thing that I'm working on or have worked on is it's they've settled on a pitch that they think is the strongest pitch with the strongest like pilot script and then the outline for the rest of the series that they're going to do for the first one, and they're going to ship that around to studios and see if anyone wants to make it. So that's basically what it means, is that like it's not being made or anything yet, it's just they have a production team set up for it that will try and sell it to a studio to get it produced. Same thing as what with for Wheel of Time,
yeah.
Red Eagle. They've changed, I don't even know what the name is anymore, but it was Red Eagle. They optioned it, they had producers on board, they had people looking at scripts and developing scripts, and they were just trying to sell it to people for a long time. So, you know, someone could buy it tomorrow, someone could buy it in 10 years, who knows?
Do you think Rift War strong enough?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's so many books for the Rift War, so it depends on what they want to do. I think if they just focus on the first three books, Magician, Silverthorn, Darkness at Sephnon, like there's definitely something they can do there. It's more high fantasy than Wheel of Time is. It's more traditional fantasy than Wheel of Time, which is the thing that they have to kind of look at and see if they need to update it for today's audiences. But it's one of the things that we talked about a long time ago. Was that if Wheel of Time is successful, then you're going to start seeing a lot more traditional fantasy projects being optioned and being.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what we were. That's what I mean. We thought that was going to happen after Lord of the Rings, and sure, there were a few.
They also tried to make movies, though, didn't they? That's the thing. Like, you know. It's the funny thing about Lord of the Rings is that people think of it as this big sprawling big thing, but really it's 1,000 pages.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, no, but I was thinking like after Lord of the Rings, I mean, we saw, or was it actually after Game of Thrones? No, after Lord of the Rings, that's when we saw like the Earthsea. Was it after Game of Thrones we saw Shannara?
Yeah.
And they were just that they just didn't have the chops to make them. And hopefully we won't see too much. Maybe too many rushed projects.
Because after the Lord of the Rings movies, we had like a lot of movies trying to do it, like The Sorcerer's Apprentice and the Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, please don't! I've seen
What's the one that you?
Dungeon Siege.
Dungeon Siege.
Yeah. Name of the King.
Yeah, Name of the King, and it was all movies they were trying to do, and it was just obviously a fantasy. Unless it's a very kind of self-contained thing, like Lord of the Rings, Lord of the Rings isn't self-contained, but it's like it's 1,000 words for three books, which you can do into long movies. Most fantasy properties aren't like that, and they need to be TV shows, right? So like it was when Game of Thrones came out, and then you had like Shannara, and it was just people doing it badly.
Yeah. Well, hopefully.
But also, as well, it was a mass audience expectation then, because it was like, they were like, well, is it going to be like Game of Thrones? I don't really want that much magic. I don't want this, that much that. So anything else, still kind of like, well, what do we have that we can do?
Shannara isn't like
that. I mean, you know, Joe Abercrombie stuff, but he wasn't super popular at that point as he is now. And, you know, that might happen at some, and I think they would be incredibly successful.
I would love to see
like the next Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
it can mean a lot of different things, but I think in generally what they mean is something that's going to appeal to people that don't watch fantasy. And with that, you need to be as low fantasy as possible in most areas. And
it needs to be similar to historical fiction, really, is what it means. I mean really, Joe Abercrombie's the blade itself and stuff like that is like probably the least magic of them all,
because there is magic in it, but the magic is so soft magic system, and to the point where most of the people in the world don't believe in magic
anymore.
And the actual main magician, Baez, can he even do magic? That's one of the questions. Like, can he do anything? it were, you know, it would work so well
yeah.
as a TV series, and it would have that mass appeal more so than anything else, I think.
It's kind of like in Terry Pratchett's, is it like Weird Sisters, where Granny Weatherwax says like the main point of magic is to not have to use magic.
So like I think what was the real kind of thing that changed perception whilst The Witcher more so than Game of Thrones. So I think Game of Thrones is one of those kind of outliers where it's like it's its own thing. Nothing else really like it. Anything else they'll try and do like it won't work because there's nothing else really like it that's got that kind of appeal. I mean, there is other books that are like it, but nothing that would have that appeal at the time that could be done as cheaply as it was at the time as well. And obviously HBO did it, which HBO do put a lot of attention for quality. I mean, the pilot was completely reshot of Game of Thrones. It was recast because the pilot was atrocious, apparently, and there was lots of problems with it. But like The Witcher, then with that being successful, brought in then more elements of traditional fantasy into it, like creatures and a bit more magic and a bit. And even though they kind of did limit it a little bit, like you see the amount, like Geralt hardly does any magic at all in season one, and in season two, pretty much every fucking episode is doing something, right? That was a big change, I think. Whereas like people were like, yeah, okay, it can be this, but it can also be this a little bit as well. And then Wheel of Time has been another step beyond that, where it's like more magical, and a lot of people have been like, yeah, okay, yeah, I can cope with this, I can deal with this magic, I can, you know. So yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with Rift War, because obviously there's a lot of magic in it. The first book is called Magician. There's parallel universes. There's other dimensions. There's other worlds. You know, it's pretty high fantasy, and it'll be expensive as well to do, I think. But yeah, looking
forward to see what studio would actually pick it up then.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing as well, like, depending on what, you know, if Disney picked it up, you'd know it would be, because some parts of the Rift War, especially Magician, some parts of it tread around YA, but then some of it doesn't as well. It goes way beyond that, but it could go in either direction. So somewhere like Disney picks up, you'd imagine they would move it more into that YA area. If someone like Netflix have got quite a lot of properties doing it at the moment, maybe HBO would take it on and they would just really go straight into it, you know what I mean? But yeah, it'd be interesting to see. But Joe Abercrombie's, like the first Law series would be really, really good. But I'm kind of hoping for the Belgariad. I want to see it.
Why? I know you do. No, I'm hoping that they would do something like the Black Company.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't have a lot of, I mean, that's early, it's early Grimdark. It doesn't have much.
I think that'd be good. That'd have potential as well. But I kind of want to see, as much as I would like to see like Grimdark stuff, like Joe Abercrombie's and other people's stuff adapted, I would also just like to see some proper, like, balls to the wall high fantasy.
Just like a Margaret Weiss, Tracy Hickman, Dragonlance.
Yeah. I just love to see like an absolutely huge budget TV show that is like just what I want is 8 episodes of and a budget of $250 million of the Belgariad. That's what I want. Book one, Porn of Prophecy, 8 episodes. You probably need 2 episodes, but I want 8 episodes. $250 million for this season. That's what I want, right? I just want to see it all.
Isn't it strange, though? I mean, no matter what I personally think of David Eddings and the Belgariad, isn't it strange? I mean, because it's hugely successful. Hugely successful. I mean, if you look at when we look at like the, I don't know, because I mean a lot of times you talk about, at least Americans talk about like the Mount Rushmore of something, And I mean, on Mount Rushmore, saying that, I mean, you'd have more than four faces, authors on it. I mean, you've got to have, especially in the 80s or late 80s, early 90s of the fantasy world. I mean, it is, I mean, it's Jordan and it's Donaldson and it's Eddings, maybe Weiss and Hickman, maybe Salvatore. I mean, there's, I mean,
Ursula Le Guin as well. Ursula Le Guin as well. Don't forget about her.
Yeah, but I think she's a little earlier. I mean, she's earlier than the 80s. If you look at like the 80s high fantasy.
Yeah, I suppose so. Yeah, I think I'm not surprised by Eddings, because the thing is, like, a lot of people get to the Belgaria pretty much right after Lord of the Rings. Yeah.
And then it's usually Jordan after that.
Yeah, a lot of times, yeah. And the thing is with Eddings, what he did was he took Lord of the Rings and made it more accessible to wider audience people. And the funny books, they're funny. The characters are funny. I mean, they're all the same character. Yeah. They all talk exactly the same way.
But it's very easy to read. It's an easy read. You'll read it in one sitting.
Exactly. It's easy to read. And it's something that... There's some things in it that haven't aged particularly well, particularly the racial kind of stuff.
No.
But it was something that you could probably read to your children fairly early on. And a lot of people would have picked it up then with the parents reading it to them, or they themselves picking it up and reading it. Because I think you could easily read that. I mean, I read... They're easier to read than The Hobbit. And I read The Hobbit when I was seven.
Yeah.
Right? And... There's the stuff that would go over your head in it, particularly like the racial stuff. I'm not saying that David Eddings is racist or anything, but like it was that kind of racial profiling where it's like, these people are from this country and this is what they are like. They're all thieves. These people like to drink. These people like war. These people are in the East and they're like, you know, this, you know what? And then there's a bit where Belgareth and Belgarian and someone else have the black face to get through somewhere as well in, I think, the fourth book in the first, which obviously is not on. And it, but that's of the time, you know, in the 70s, that was like one of those things. But I'm not surprised that it's like he's so kind of highly thought of in that way, because it was something that a lot of people would have read, would have enjoyed. Yeah. You know, they are fun books. They're funny, the stakes are high, but also you never really...
You're never really afraid of
doubt that the people are going to succeed, right? No. And it's, you know, it takes all that kind of like, and it's familiar as well. Like once you've read one Eddings book, you've read them all to an extent, and you can go back and you can have, you know, relax with it and have a good time with it, and just, so I'm not surprised by that. But yeah, I would genuinely like to see an adaptation. But I think.
We're talking over each other, but yeah, go ahead.
I think the Lord of the Rings of Power, as it is now called, with the budget they're giving that and everything like that, and obviously because it is going more into, apparently the pilot, which is going to be two episodes, is set before the First Age. It's all set in the Undying Lands, like, so it's going to be very, very high fantasy, and it's going to be dealing with the creation of the Ring of Power, so there is going to be more magic and there's going to be more of that kind of spectacle than was in Lord of the Rings. I mean, that's going to be a big game changer as well, because it's going to be like, look, we can do this on TV as well. People will come and watch it if the production, and I think that's one of the things, is the production values. I think what puts off a lot of people that are into fantasy is that they've seen bad fantasy and they see the magic and you see the creatures and they look crap and they think this is terrible. And, you know, Witcher was a step in the right direction. Wheel of Time is a step in the right direction. And I think Lord of the Rings will be as well. And that opens it all up. And just, you know, really looking forward to Lord of the Rings. I'm a huge Tolkien fan. But I'm just also excited to see the effects it has on Wheel of Time going forward as well.
Now, the only thing that I meant was that I was surprised that seeing as David Eddings is seen as such an icon of his age, because I think Ursula K. Le Guin, they have a lot to thank Ursula K. Le Guin for, but I find her to be in an earlier category together with like Peter Beagle, for instance, like the gap between Tolkien and Lewis and the more modern. So you have like Beagle and Lieber and Le Guin, I think it's surprising that nobody's actually attempted Eddings, even in like why? Because I mean, they did Last Unicorn as a Rankin Bass, animated movie, and I mean, it's good. It's a classic. It's not great, but it's good enough. And they were in talks of making it into a live action movie some years ago. But why not? Why didn't they just make an animated movie or a TV show out of Eddings' books, The Belgariad? I never really understood that, because you would have thought that there would have been enough public appeal to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows? It's one of those things where it's like, I think maybe just look at it and see, like, you know what, it's 10 books, but also, I we'll have to wrap this up in a second before we go back. It's one of those things, right, where it's like, it's 10 books and you can't really adapt the first five without adapting the second five, because it's a continuation of the story in it. But you don't have to. You don't have to adapt all 10 books.
No.
Right? And the books are, some of the books are quite short for epic fantasy, for what it is. Like, you know, the first Pawn of Prophecy, I think, is about 300 pages or something like that. And I don't think they get any bigger than like 500 pages.
No, I don't think so.
So yeah, there's stuff to do. I just think it's one of those things where it's like, there's a lot of traveling. It's the same with the first couple of Wheel of Time, first three Wheel of Time books. There's a lot of traveling, and it's, but when the Wheel of Time, as you see when you're reading the books going on, there's a progression where either characters start staying in one location a lot longer, or some characters find ways to travel a lot quicker. That doesn't happen in the in his books, but always constantly on the move. So it's kind of, it's a tricky adaptation to do, and it could be quite expensive, because that's one of the reasons why that 100 million budget of Wheel of Time season one maybe didn't look like it had gone so far, was because they were having to, practically every single episode was like, we're in a new place and we have to make sets in these new places. Whereas the 90 million season one Game of Thrones in 2011 looked like it went longer, was because we have three sets, and that's what they have for the entire season, right? The Belgariad, it's like, not only are they a different town, they're in a different country pretty much every all the time. And then because of the way that he's written it, all the different countries have completely different cultures, completely different looks. So it's all that kind of stuff that comes into it. So I'd say it'd be quite a difficult adaptation to do, but you never know.
No. Animated would have worked.
Yeah, but not that many people watch animation like that. So
they don't think that's true. I remember that horrible Lion, Witch and the Wardrobe animated movie that came out.
Yeah. Like, unless it's like, you know, Pixar, unless it's for kids, like animation. Yeah. Arcane has done well on Netflix, but that's a specific niche market for, you know. You'd never get that kind of same mass market appeal. That's what they want to do at the end of the day. That's what people forget sometimes. It's like, they're not making this because we want to see it. They're making it because they make some money.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that was a good talk. We talked about Book of Boba Fett, Mandalorian. We've talked some about The Wheel of Time today. We've talked about a bunch of different adaptations. It's been productive.
The adaptation show. We could be the first ever. I wonder if there is any David Eddings YouTube channels and podcasts. There must be.
Well, that'll be your homework for next time. To look it up.
If anyone's still watching, if anyone knows, let us know and we will check them out.
Yes. Well, next time we'll talk about more about The Shadow Rising.
Yes,
and there's some info dumping going on in these chapters coming up.
You love it.
New people coming in, stuff like that. Yeah, so thanks for watching this special episode of The Wheel of Time. We talked about the TV show. That Amazon show right there. Is. I'm pointing at you, so.
Yeah.
Yes. And for David Green, my name is Chris Mary Holtman, and thanks for watching. And what do we say?
Until next turning of the wheel of TV show. Next year. This year, hopefully.